All right, there's the evidence. Welcome back, sir.
Yeah, that's pretty damning.
Yeah, I mean that's right up there with the weapons of mass destruction that were moved to Syria that weren't in Iraq that Judith Miller wrote about in the New York Times, or the gas attacks in Syria it really rivals Russia bombing its own pipeline. That's
there. You go.
There you go. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to see you.
I wish we didn't have to talk about bad things all the time, but from Ukraine to threats on Mexico to Gaza, I got my little octopus. You know, they're scared of these too now. These are terror weapons. See, there you go. We got to talk about it, though. You know the story behind this?
No.
It was Greta Thunberg, who I don't like. She's a climate nut or whatever, but she sometimes... people are wrong on some things or right on other things. So she had a sign supporting Gaza with like three other girls. They're holding up signs, free Palestine, ceasefire now or something. And she had a little plushie doll like this just on the chair behind her because she's a little girl and she has toys, whatever. And they're all like, oh, that's the symbol from a 1938 Nazi pamphlet of an octopus with a Star of David saying Jews control the world. Obviously, it was like that's like someone saw a plushie and their mind went right to a flyer they had seen from the 30s. It's just a toy she sleeps with. And so I just lean into the clown world. I'm like, okay, fine. I have octopus too. So it's so stupid. Well, that's it. I guess we can make him angry. But yeah, it's become a symbol of resistance because it's just so ridiculous. And a lot of these lies, it's hard to even list them. And it's sad because some claims might be true, but because they lie so much, be in a baby out with a bathwater situation.
Right. They've destroyed the credibility. I'm at the stage now. I don't believe anything that the Israelis say unless there's some independent corroboration, because they've been caught just in so many lies since October 7th.
Oh, I reached that mark many years ago.
Yeah.
But the lies are, it's not just like a mistake. These are definitely intentional deceptions of the, you know, yellow cake uranium from Niger variety that are on purpose, but they're so ridiculous. Some of them are so over the top, and they seem to be something I coined back in during Cast Lead was the lie saturation tactic. By the time you debunk lie number 1, 2, and 3, they already have 4, 5, 6, and 7. And that seems to work.
Yeah.
I thought we could go over some of the, it'd be hard to nail them all because I counted like 60 big ones. But from October 7th to now, what are some of the outrageous things that have been said? And not just said on Twitter by President Biden, by... you know, newspapers of renown, supposedly televised mass media have repeated a lot of these things. And when they retract it, it's just, oh, oops, that's on Twitter, right? That's not on TV. I guess the first one that comes to mind for me, the big ones would be the original lie, the death toll and the 40 decapitated babies.
Yeah. 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 I pointed, you know, I wrote about that after, in about 3 or 4 days, saying, well, wait a second. If there really were 40 babies decapitated, what are their names? And where are the grieving grandparents? You know, you could, maybe the parents had been kidnapped or taken, but, or killed. But the grandparents, there'd be at least one or two. And, you know, grandparents with their grandchildren are normally sort of crazy, you know, as far as, obsessing over them and talking about them. And, you know, if 40 babies really had been beheaded, then you would have seen it all. You know, you would have seen these grandparents lined up. They'd be interviewed on MSNBC, CNN, Sky News, Al Jazeera. Everybody would have them.
If it was 40 Jewish babies, I mean, they won't interview the actual dead Yeah. Or grandparents of dead babies, of course, but yeah. Oh, absolutely. They would have. And it's just what a nice round number. It just happens to be 40 and they cut their heads off. And that lie came from a guy named David Ben Zion. And he's a right wing settler. And the Gray Zone, I think, is who broke that story. That's where I saw
it. Right.
I don't know, though. But like it was on the face of it. Why are a bunch of babies at military bases or a rave anyway? Almost 99% of the deaths of the Israelis were all adults. Is that what was being
correct? Mm-hmm. You know what what Hamas, you know, quote, Hamas is a terrorist organization. We use that term loosely. They are religious fanatics. They have a history that they've sort of up until now had ruined any possibility of a relationship with countries like Saudi Arabia and Egypt. Egypt is particularly opposed to Hamas, going back to the let's call it the spiritual father of Hamas with in the Muslim Brotherhood and their attack on and murder of Anwar Sadat back in, I think it was 81. So it's just... We've now seen Hamas, though, carry out what was a sophisticated military operation that was designed to attack and kill Israeli military sites and grab as many hostages as they could and take them back into Gaza to use them as bargaining chips to release Palestinians being held by the Israelis. And...
I think those Hamas are prisoners, but they're also hostages.
Yeah.
Because they just went around Lincoln style, arresting people with no trial or anything and just throw them into jail, even kids.
Well, you know, that's just, it's the nature of government versus those who want to overthrow governments. You know, the Americans in 1775, 1776 experienced that as well. You know, we were insurrectionists. We were terrorists. but we were the good terrorists. So,
well, it's not terrorism if you win.
Yeah. We get the labels are used as a way to try to discredit or to ignore, avoid talking about what the actual issues are and why these people are doing it. You know, as in the immediate aftermath of the 9/11 attacks, they're attacking us for our freedom. No. You know, the United States has a bit of a track record in the Middle East and has engendered a lot of animosity in some sectors. And, you know, terrorism is the tool of the weak. It's not a powerful
nation. Ran a building, they ran a plane into a building because they would prefer to fly over the building and drop a bomb on it the way we do, but they don't have F-15s and things like that. So they use commercial airliners. But they wrote about it. Muhammad Atta and the rest of them that we had will and testaments from laid out the reasons for it.
Right.
And one of the reasons was the occupation of Palestine.
Right.
As well as the butchering in Lebanon, Iraq, and da da da. Now, obviously, you can't collectively just take that out on random people in New York, but they're in their twisted head. I mean, these are damaged people. You do this, you kill someone's family members, you watch thousands and thousands of Iraqi kids starving to death. You've seen your people you identify with, your religion, you know, blown up in Beirut and murdered in the West Bank. It'll eat at you, man. Like some portion of the population is going to find that imam on the hill that's preaching about great Satan, and he's going to follow it all the way to kill himself just to take some of these evil people with him.
Right. Well, and it's not exactly like Western society is this beacon of light, of morality and justice to the rest of the world. We used to believe that about ourselves.
I pointed that out about Hamas. Like Gaza, they've killed how many now? Like 15,000 or something. Yeah. I said, imagine if they just nuked the whole city, because America did that twice.
Yeah, but we actually killed more with the conventional bombs than we did with the atomic bombs. You know.
Yeah, well, you have to add the radiation afterward too. But
yeah,
the firebombing of Tokyo and Dresden and Cologne were just as bad as the nuking of Nagasaki.
Well, yeah, and I really haven't researched this. I would imagine someone somewhere, maybe a PhD dissertation, wrote a book wrote an assessment of the effectiveness of the 8th Air Force in bombing civilian targets. I would go with the assumption that the findings of that would be it was not only totally ineffective, but it actually probably helped prolong the war because it kept the it rallied the population around Hitler as opposed to dividing and separating the population. The same effect that happened in the United Kingdom as it faced the Blitz from the Germans, that instead of riling the people up to throw Churchill out, they rallied around him. So sometimes it's sort of counterintuitive, but
9/11, they rallied around Bush instead of saying, "Hey, your foreign policy brought this on." It was like, "How dare you put this sticker on the back of your car?"
Well, yeah, it wasn't just his foreign policy. I mean, he was continuing what had Clinton and George H.W. Bush before that, and Ronald Reagan.
His dad. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Clinton too. Gosh, Clinton was. There's a statue of Bill Clinton right across one of these extremist madrasas the CIA allegedly set up in Kosovo, where some of those fighters were trained there or radicalized there that ended up in Syria. I mean, they did a prisoner swap in Syria where they got Mohammed Zamlar out of prison, who was a handler for Mohammed Atta, was one of the pilots on 9/11. And that was a Ral al-Sham. They wanted to get theirs out. They're like, okay. They got some Syrian commanders or something out, and they're like, why do you want this guy for? This guy was a 9/11 terrorist. What is he? How can you allow him out? So they did. You look at the millions murdered in Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam when you add them together. And, of course, the invasions of Iraq, Panama, Grenada. Like, there's a lot of death on the Western side of civilians. All those wars were majority civilians killed.
Yeah. Well, I would like it if, we could have some consistency in policy, and that's never going to happen. And that just shows how naive I am to hope for that kind of consistency. But, enacting a, quote, counterterrorism policy, it ought to be pretty black and white in terms of that we will denounce terrorism in all of its forms. But we're very selective. And in fact, the Mujahideen al-Khalq, a terrorist group in Iran, used to be on our terrorist list, and we used to monitor and track their attacks.
Was it Hillary that let that sunset?
No, it was. I think it was during George W. Bush.
No, I mean he labeled them terrorists, but they are no longer.
No, they were labeled terrorists long before. They were terrorists back as long as we started keeping lists, because remember they got their start in the 60s. And then once the Ayatollah took over, they became more active, and we did label them as a terrorist organization. Now we're funding them. And in fact, I found it interesting that they're attacking one of the people in the Biden Department of Defense. She's an assistant in the Office of the Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict. And because she was raising objections to funding the MEC, which I thought, I would agree with that. But, that they're touting her then as some sort of Iranian asset because she's taking that position, which is just ridiculous. But, go back at the end of World War II, the United States signed up a bunch of Nazis as intelligence assets. So people who were guilty of war crimes all of a sudden became our buddies. So,
with organized crime too. Man.
Yeah. So our moral standing on this is pretty sketchy.
It seems to be. And it's not just Saudi Arabia and other state sponsored groups like Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab and all these groups. And we know it's going on and nothing's done about it. The UAE sponsoring the RSF in Sudan right now. They had over 1,000 people killed in the last week. Well, 1,300.
Here's Qatar, big supporter of Hamas. Mm-hmm. And yet the United States relies on Qatar for its largest military base in the Persian Gulf at Al Udeid.
One other big sponsor of Hamas was Israel itself.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Was that partly how they got rid of the Fatah, not got rid of, but Fatah got ousted from power because Israel was withholding their tax revenues, so they couldn't use it to do some of the things they had promised, but they allowed Hamas to use it?
Well, I think, you know, it's a, I understand the Israeli strategy as far as, you know, put the most radical group forward possible because it will alienate the rest of the world. But you know, what they didn't count on was the fact that Bibi and his response to October 7th would be so crazy. I think in that regard, Hamas miscalculated because they had these hostages, and instead of Israel negotiating for the hostages, Israel killed a bunch of them. So they killed Hamas.
They underestimated Bibi, or they underestimated Hamas? Because usually when they go around and mess with the Al-Aqsa mosque, the response is Hamas fires a few rockets, Israel freaks out, and then goes and mows the lawn. But I think maybe he was assuming it would be something like that again, sort of victim of his own success. They'll fire some rockets, it won't hit anything, and then we'll go and blow them up. And that'll distract things away from me trying to get rid of the division of powers, the Supreme Court and things. But instead, they broke out of the cage and took over bases and did what they did. And so now they're saying Bibi, they hate him not because of all the bombing of children, but because he's not safe. He's not secure because he got them killed.
Yeah. Well, they ignored the intelligence. I think it's pretty clear. Israel had prior warning and they discounted it. And then, you know, that happens. I've seen that.
I saw that with the Egyptians. Scott Ritter was on. He was saying Israel relied too much on AI. I don't know what your thoughts on that. They became too tech dependent.
I don't know if that's the case or not. It is clear. I think Egypt said, "Hey, we pass this information to Israel," and knowing how, you know, these intelligence bureaucracies, even though Israel's a small country, it still has a large intelligence bureaucracy, and the Mossad and Shin Bet don't necessarily share with each other. And then within the army, they have army intelligence as well. And so when intelligence warning information like that comes in, initially there's an analyst somewhere making an assessment. Yeah, I think this is real, or I think it's nonsense. And if you think it's real, then you go to your boss and you try to brief it up the chain of command. It's not like all of these news flashes drop in at the Bibi Netanyahu's desk and he reads it and he goes, "No, we're going to ignore it." No, I think it bubbles up more from the bottom, and they just didn't take it seriously. They thought, "Nah, they can't do that. They're not capable of it." And that may have been, you know, Israel's failure to collect on it or to pay attention to indications they had that they had that capability. But what's clear, and as Scott wrote a really good piece on it, is it's probably the most successful raid so far in the 21st century in terms of the scale of the operation, given that these guys were not a conventional military force by any stretch. But they, you know, using the hang gliders to go to hit the kibbutz where the rave was being held. Again, their objective was to take as many hostages as possible. I know it's been portrayed that they flew in to kill all the rave goers, but that was not the case. They were trying to capture them, and there were Israeli security guards in that group that started firing back. So,
yeah, that's on film. Yeah.
Yeah. So
well, apparently, what happened is the police set up a roadblock, and so the people who were leaving the rave just went off to the left and right side of the road because there's a roadblock in the way, and then just started to get out and ran.
Yeah.
And there are people hiding in their cars, and then you have the IDF shows up, and they're shooting at Hamas and ducking and stuff behind the cars full of people.
Right, right. And then you get the IDF Air Force show up and starts blowing up cars without knowing who's in them.
Yeah, so, I saw that. I saw the damage from that. I go, well, I didn't see any Hamas of flamethrowers or anything. Like, how these cars get torched? It has to be the Israelis, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't like they're running around with Molotov cocktails.
Well, that wouldn't even do it to some of these cars. They look like hellfire or something hit them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And smashed too. They lied about a lot about the rave. 240 people got machine gunned, they said. And women were raped on top of the corpses of their friends. And another dead baby lives. They cut their fingers off and gouged out their eyeballs.
And yeah, I know. It was ridiculous. There was one video clip of a young woman being taken out of the back of a vehicle, and they claimed that the stains that were down her backside were from she'd been raped and was blood. It wasn't blood. It was
it's mud because it's all over her legs too. And her,
yeah,
her
you shoes. Have it. You know, when you've heard the expression "scared shitless."
Oh.
That's what happens. You know, you evacuate your bowels, and
she had it all over her. I guess she could have sat on her own feet because it's all over her shoes and stuff too.
Yeah. So it was. I mean, well, I said this was not anticipated. You know, she's frightened.
Yeah. That's yeah. Well, some of these settlers, like when you go, I had an idea about the diaspora that just go and move into someone else's house. Why not? Well, like wherever they're from, shouldn't say they come from Brooklyn or whatever, and they just move into a house at a settlement. Shouldn't the U.S. say, okay, you lose your passport, we're confiscating your property, and you know you're now a criminal, because the settlements are internationally illegal. That's recognized.
Yeah.
So if you're from, I don't know, Budapest or wherever, shouldn't the country you're from revoke your passport and confiscate your property and say you're under arrest? Of course, Israel won't extradite them, but make them not extradite them. Like we could, yeah. If you're going to say it's illegal, and the UN has said that too, then everyone participating in it ought to say, well, if you're from our country, you're now a criminal for going there. I don't know. Maybe that could be a step, because there are, like, I think Belgium and some places and Bolivia and all have said no relations with Israel anymore.
So maybe untangling this whole mess in terms, you know, it's not like trying to sort out a fight between your kids in terms of who hit who first. You know, the backstory for everybody is such that this is, you know, if you will, this is really a that whole land, Israel, Palestine, has been a soccer ball in international competition and international imperialism, whether it was the Romans or the Arabs or the Ottoman Turks or the Brits. You know, there's always somebody, the history, at least going back, you know, almost 2,000 years, is one of continued occupation and control by other countries.
I don't see why it matters. Living there. Like, you can't take private property away from somebody, period. So, like, who cares if the Canaanites are related to Palestinians? They probably were. There are probably some Hebrew there, too, who are related to Jews. So, like, you just can't bulldoze someone's house.
Now, see, we got away with that in the United States with the Indians, because they didn't have a concept of private property. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's because there was such abundance, the ratio of land to people, that it was unnecessary.
So we can come in and take it. You know, this, you know, this is an intractable conflict. And I think it's only going to end eventually with a broader war. Whether we avoid it this time or not, I guess I'm growing a little more optimistic that it's not going to spread. Because when you look at the actions of Saudi Arabia and Egypt right now, so Egypt's blocking Iran from delivering any food and humanitarian supplies. The Saudis are, you know, they're playing the ultimate double game. You don't have a widespread popular uprising yet in Saudi Arabia demanding they do something on behalf of the Palestinians. On the other hand, the aftermath of October 7 has created a level of unity within the Arab and Muslim world that we have not seen in previous, like in the 2014 Israeli invasion into Gaza, or the 2006 invasion into southern Lebanon, or, you know, even going back, you know, with prior dust-ups going back to 19, you know, the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in Lebanon in the 1980s. So this is new because of the growing international reaction. It's sort of a race to see what Israel can do militarily before the outrage on the international side becomes so great that it has to back off. I think there are signs that Israel's already sort of starting to back off, and the raid into Al-Shifa certainly didn't help them. I mean, it'd be one thing if they came out dragging, you know, 500 Hamas fighters and a bunch of RPGs.
Do you really think they thought that was Hamas base, or just that was an excuse?
I think it was an excuse.
Yeah.
Because they knew what it was. I mean, they built the thing back in 1983. So now Israel built it. So they knew exactly what was there. And these propaganda pieces they put out is laughable. The one from the Rantisi Children's Hospital that, you know, you featured that guy at the front, you know, when he goes through that, I had a good friend of mine who's a very famous journalist, I'll leave it at that, called me up yesterday because I had sent him the piece, and he goes, "You're kidding. This is a joke, right?" I said, "No, it's not a joke. It's for real." And he was like, "Oh my God, how could they be so bad at this?" And I said,
"No." They do it in English, pointing at like a staff chart. I'm like, who's this propaganda directed at in English?
Yeah, no, it was specifically designed for the American public. So Israel recognizes that its survival depends upon keeping the American public in its camp. I plan to write a piece, I think maybe tonight, where I'm going to take like some of Nikki Haley's statements where she's talking about Israel. And with her statements, instead of Israel, I'll pop in words like Iran. Have her talk about as if it was Iran or Russia or China. Mm-hmm. Well, if she was saying what she's saying about Israel, about either Iran, Russia, or China, people would be lynching her. So it's, you know, again, the hypocrisy on this just stinks.
Candace Owens has nominated Nikki Haley for president of Israel.
Yeah, I thought that was hysterical. Yeah, very funny.
Redemption arc. I mean, when you get to stunts like this, I'm like, really? They went there with their little yellow stars.
Well, it really sort of diminishes the Holocaust. When everything becomes the Holocaust, nothing's the Holocaust.
Well, they diminished it with stuff like this too. I mean, that was Psych War Department. That table reminded me of the Buchenwald stuff. It's like, because like everyone I argue with that's like a Holocaust revisionist or denier points to the extreme ridiculous exaggerations. And then it's like, so all of it, right? And like, no, not all of it, right? And I'm afraid that's sort of happening now. Like Hamas did shoot civilians. That's true.
Yeah, no, I'm sure there were some,
people were murdered in camps in Poland too, but they did not build furniture out of body parts and stuff, and they did not behead 40 babies. And I like, the more you lie, the more you discredit everything else. And so people are looking at this, and they did the same thing in Ukraine with the Buchenwald massacre. Buchenwald is a Polish camp. All these things they lied about in Ukraine. They bombed their own pipeline. They all this stuff, and so. Kids, people who are like 20 years old, that's all they've seen is lies about Gaza, lies about Ukraine, lies about maybe Libya and Syria and then Iraq. And then they start thinking, well, what else isn't true? I did a tweet about this, about people taking a second look at World War II, and a lot of people took it the wrong way. I'm like, I'm not saying, oh, hooray, let's have another world war or Hitler's great or something like that. I'm like, come on, that was supposed to be fucking obvious. It's that they're going to start doubting the claims of other wars because all they've seen is nonsense and nonsense in a way that's like clearly over the top, not even a good lie, not even a maybe. And you're going to gaslight people to where they don't believe anything. I mean, there are people today who think the earth is flat because they got lied to so much about COVID that now they just don't believe in science or vaccines at all.
Right.
And some even Ritter and some others, they're like, this is a bad take. And like, no, you see a picture of Hitler and your mind is turns off and you're like, you need a witch to burn, and you interpret it the way you want because condemning stuff is fun. But it's not what I was saying at all. Clearly, was like, if you lie and lie and lie, you discredit yourself even when you've told the truth in the past. Very simple concept.
Hey, that was why that the story of the boy who cried wolf. That's why that was
Wolfowitz.
Yeah. You know, but yeah. <That's> you. I mean, when you continually raise a false warning or tell a lie, and then the one time that you're actually telling the truth and people listen, they ignore you.
You know, a serial liar will read that story and go, well, they should have believed him the third time. Why didn't they? It's their fault. Yeah, they did, it yeah. just, you know, the lesson doesn't register whatsoever. But yeah, the more they lie and the more it's lied, not, it should have been debunked right away. And I think the New York Times actually did say Hamas did not bomb its own hospital. Here's the, you know, Al Jazeera too. And it's good that they're doing that, that they're debunking it, because if they didn't, if they all went along with it, then you just won't be able to trust anything from CNN or whatever, you know, no matter what they say.
But it's been helpful that Haaretz, you know, the liberal newspaper in Israel, has done some, good journalism. You know, they've actually reported stories that the government, if they had their druthers, would not allow to be published, but they've gone forward with them. And it's not just your hearsay, it's with eyewitnesses, and it's with, looking at actual evidence as opposed to taking the propaganda and running with it. Because I remember that 40, beheading of 40 baby thing, man, that ran like wildfire here over in the States.
Biden said he saw it.
Yeah.
And well, I think what he saw was that AI picture. You know, and with the fingers where these two fingers are longer than these two.
Yeah.
It was the pinky finger was as big as the middle finger, because AI has a hard time with hands. It was some puppy or something that they had changed. Like, look at this burned baby in an oven. And that was the so-called evidence. And it got debunked, but the president got up there and said it anyway, just like he said Kyle Rittenhouse was a white supremacist.
Yeah.
And Jan 6 and everything else he doesn't like is a white supremacist. Even the State Department was saying it, still says it. Oh, yeah. The babies.
Well, I know that I was in contact with a buddy of mine who's a military intelligence officer at a particular base. And, like a day or two after that, that was the story they got, and they were buying it initially. And he just said the guys that he was in charge of, he's at a senior rank, were just outraged. They're out of their minds over it. You know, they're just so mm-hmm. furious. Well, yeah, I give the Israelis credit for effective propaganda. They certainly pushed the right buttons, and they made
the IDF too. If they believe that, do you think they're going to have any restraint when they go into Gaza?
Oh,
they're willing to shoot anything that moves because they think they killed the babies.
They haven't had restraint prior to this anyway. So, I mean, that's one of the sort of the unfortunate things about the Israelis is the arrogant factor that comes from believing that they do it better, they do it best, and they won't listen to anybody.
Well, that also comes from never having consequences for doing what they do. Well, I mean, the fact that, I mean, October 7th, starting the story in the middle, the fact that you have an occupied people, that you have people that have a wall wrapped around them with machine guns pointed at them, ought to disturb people already. Like, how do we get to this point? Why are they living there with a wall around them and machine guns pointed at them? How'd that happen? Where'd they come from? The Nakba, and that's the whole concept of annexing land, and just like in the West Bank, you can just move into someone's living room as a Jew and kick that family out and say, God gave it to me. And that works.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why last week I went through and put together sort of the timeline of Israel of who occupied what, when, and where. And it's pretty interesting. I shared it with one of my Jewish friends, and it was eye-opening for him. So the one group that has ruled that land the longest in terms of an ethnic group are the Arabs. They've they've ruled it longer than the Jews, longer than the Romans, longer than the Ottoman Turks. So, you know, if you're going to use longevity of occupation as a standard, then okay, give it to them. The entire, you know, when you go back through the first book of the Bible, Genesis, and go through that in depth, in terms of you know, who begat who and who lived where, and you know, we come up with this fundamental truth that don't worry about Abraham, worry about Noah, because the fact of the matter is, if you accept, and I'm not claiming that it's true, but I'm just saying if you accept the account in Genesis as true, that means everybody is descended from Noah, which means they're all relatives. So you've got one. So if the Muslims believe in God or Allah, and the Jews believe in Yahweh, and the Christians believe in God, and if they all believe that there's a judgment day of some sort, I've always said that the question God will be asking is, why were you killing your own family? Why were you killing your own relatives? Why?
They go back to killing relatives with Cain killing Abel, and they have the story of Jacob and Esau. Those twins didn't get along either, and they think that it's mythology, and I think it's completely ridiculous, but the justification to grab land in modern times is that Jacob is the founder of Israel, and after having a wrestling match with an angel, a deity gave the land to their ethnic group. I would just laugh at that, but that's, you know, serious people like Ben Shapiro. He says, you know, facts don't care about your feelings, as he's wearing a yarmulke and quoting stories about Joshua knocking the walls down of Jericho with a trumpet and stupid stuff like that. But like, even, okay, let's say that you think the biblical or the Torah stuff is metaphors, but it's loosely based on history and some of the miracles didn't happen, but these people were hearing that. Okay, fine. Still, you have the Philistines there before the Jews, because who is Joshua attacking? Jericho. Who lived there? Philistines. Who is King David allegedly killed a giant from where? Goliath, the Philistine. And who is King Solomon warring with? The Philistines. Who did Samson kill with a jawbone of an ass? Philistines. Then if you read, the Philistines weren't there first either. They're there before the Jews, but before the Philistines are Aegean people that moved there and married into Canaanites. Canaanites came in there after the Natufian, and so on. And in the northern half, you had Assyrians, and in the southern half, you had Egyptians. All those groups were there before the Jews moved in there. Hebrew, who then can make up, I say, invented Judaism, because it didn't just come, you know, it supposedly got the tablets from the mountain or whatever, invent a religion, which is just borrowed from the Hyksos Exodus that they copied, the story of Gilgamesh is the flood story, old Greek myths and stuff, make up a religion, have a people, and then, but even within that, fine, you're supposed to be chosen to spread the word of God, not chosen to colonize, ethnically colonize all your neighbors to make a Jewish land, as in like an ethnic group.
Yeah, ours only. Yeah,
ours only.
Yeah, it is. The promise was to make it would be a father of many nations. That was the promise to Abraham, right? A father of many nations, not a father of just one nation. So, I was just saying, if you're going to believe in the text and what is written in the Bible, or in the particularly the first five books of the Bible, then you know, take it at face value. If it says the father of many nations, then that means it's not just for the Jews, maybe for everybody. So, but you know, we're a warlike, we're not happy unless we're building weapons and killing people.
I just say religion is as religion does. So you can get a Christian like Ron Paul, or you can get a Pat Robertson, you can get a Osama bin Laden or Muhammad Ali. Like, it depends on who practices it. But it is important to talk about these mythologies, because whether I think it's silly or not, there are so many people that take this very seriously, that this is, gives them the right to have this land, because they think they're returning there. I mean, you have billionaires like the Bronfman family that create the right of return for Jews, but not Palestinians who'd lived there with continuity for 1,000 years at least.
I don't know.
You have blue-eyed people from Poland or whatever going in with putting on the sunscreen and this is my land. I'm from the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you were raised in a evangelical Christian tradition, but
we had quotes of God on the wall and stuff in my house.
Okay, and then so the whole doctrine of last things, the whole eschatology about the end of the world, the second coming of Jesus. And right now you have a lot of Christians who are sort of, in a twisted sort of way, hoping that that's what's transpiring right now.
Yeah. No, my family was very religious, but they always said you cannot predict the end times or force it, that it'll just come when it comes. That's what's in the Bible too.
Well, yeah, but people ignore that. You know, come on, it's selective reading.
I know. It's just like we no longer... sacrifice animals on the altar either. We don't have divine right of kings anymore either. That's in Romans 13:1, that the rulers were appointed by the Lord to oppose them as opposing against God too. We threw that out, and I'm glad we threw that out. I'd rather have representative democracy than have a monarchy that's hereditary. But
right,
the more they throw out, the better, because I don't think it's a divine book. But other people do, and this is, they think, yeah, we got to build a third temple, make Jesus come back. Like they're looking forward to Armageddon.
Yeah. That's what some folks don't understand. They think this is all just sort of what I'll call a religious, agnostic international relations, that there's no theology undergirding it. And boy, that's a mistake. I think a lot of the theology, both on the Islamic side, on the Jewish side, and on the Christian side, there are strong elements there. Now, that's the other odd thing with Israel. The ones most likely to believe that are not the ones necessarily engaged with the decision-making right now. There are some around Netanyahu, these ultra-right wingers who are proposing legislation to make it illegal to talk about Jesus and try to convert someone to Christianity. Amazing. They want to outlaw that.
So. They burn churches. They burn the Church of Miracles, where Jesus is said to have divided the loaves of fish and bread to the multitudes in front of this spot, and all but the basement was burned by terrorist settlers. And all that happened is they got like 10 months administrative detention and left out, and people were like, had a party for them. And I didn't see the Christian evangelicals didn't even know that it happened, because, you'd have to be reading Haaretz or whatever to learn about it.
It's also a lot of it's suppressed. Let's not talk about some uncomfortable things.
Do you know what destroyed theology was? The plague. Because it used to be, to become a bishop, a priest, whatever, was a very high marker. I mean, that guy can read, but it was this very learned, scholarly, serious study into theology, and they kind of kept it from becoming idiocracy, right? Like kill a commie for Christ or some stupid slogan like that. It was very serious theologians. When the plague hit, who's doing last rites? All the priests. And so all of them disproportionately were getting the plague, because they're always around funerals and last rites and people dying. And it wiped out this intellectual group. And so the threshold to become a priest went way down. And that's how you get your like Cotton Mathers and people like that, where it was just the thumpers, the dispensationalists, the weirdos, the literalists, the fundamentalists, the thing they think, oh, somebody really lived in the belly of a whale for 3 days. So, and rather than taking like the purpose or the point of the story, and this is not like literal, no theologian thought that, like, but now they do. We've gone backwards because the morons took over, and then morons choose other morons. Like, you can never get it back. You can never get the church the way it was. And it was the plague that did that. It's an interesting hypothesis I heard. That happened in Japan too with the plague, the different faith and everything. But the Buddhists gained a lot of financial power by doing funeral rites, and everyone had to pay them because Shinto didn't have a death ritual. Oh. So it took over the Fujiwara family, especially. They would always marry into the right place. And by doing funerals, they gained quite a purse and were able to convert some. I mean, Japan's mostly atheistic, but there was a point where Buddhism is the second largest religion, even though it's different from how they practice it in China, the Zen version. But interesting stuff how something like a disease can affect theology.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I hadn't thought about that. Makes sense.
I think about weird stuff.
make the unusual connections.
Yeah, well, that's
how I end up with this stuff.
I mapped out the pedophile rings. Yeah, like
yeah.
Long time ago, and after Epstein got arrested in 2019 for the second time, people started paying attention. But I quit doing it because I realized it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I know about September 11th or JFK or pedophile rings or anything else, because there's so many other like Alex Jones type theories that are just going to outshout whatever I say and make it seem ridiculous. So it's, I can't get my foot in the door because those topics, some of them like 9/11, you just sound like an absolute kook. Like, oh, you're an airplane denier. Do you think a missile hit the Pentagon? You're like, no, not that. Yeah, this is, I don't know. But I think things are changing since the censorship's mostly been removed from Twitter, X, whatever, that more serious people can get in. And a lot of these lies we were talking about the propaganda against Gaza, it's been Twitter and Telegram that day came out and said, no, this is a calendar or whatever it is. You know, if it wasn't for that, think of how bad it would be. They could just say whatever they want. It would be on TV and that would be that.
Well, you know, and I've argued that that's actually one of the benefits we enjoy now that didn't exist during the Vietnam War. Because during the Vietnam War, you did not really have social media at all. And you were entirely dependent upon what CBS, NBC, ABC reported. Now, the back then, the corporate control of these news networks was far less imposing, far less controlled. And they did have some independence and were able to, you know, put information out. But it was limited. And now, you know, it's sort of, it's a two-edged sword. Anybody can get on and put out about anything, true or not, and it fills up, you know, you have to develop some critical thinking skills. And that's one of the real problems we face with the, you know, the generation, your age and younger. Most do not have good critical thinking skills because they were raised, for example, playing video games. Video games don't teach critical thinking skills. Teaches
more thinking than watching TV, though. At least you have to make decisions. Like, I don't think any generation has a lot of critical thinkers. Like, I'm looking at it, I'm like, half of you thought aliens were invading because it was on a radio show. Like, oh, the authorities said a thing. And, you know, like, they don't think. I can't stand people that play games all day or whatever, but, like, I still think at least it's a little bit active. Like, if you're just, that's got to be the worst. And I think I said this to you before, but I don't know if you've seen there's a TV show where people stand with their arms behind their back, like across from each other at the table, and one of them just slaps the other guy in the face. So they just,
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen the movie Idiocracy.
Yes.
So how far is the slap in the face game from ouch my balls in Idiocracy?
Yeah, no, it's,
we're there.
Yeah,
that's where we are.
No, and these you know, slap offs, they've got professionals. You make money doing it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's.
I don't know how you can watch that. Oh, and then the other guy gets to slap him. Oh, just that, is that a sport?
Well, yeah.
I wonder how they know it's a slap so that you wouldn't just angle it a little and hit them with your palm. I don't know. It's like, you want to end that game real quick, bring in a sumo wrestler and he will knock everyone out on the first shot.
Yeah. Well, they do. I think they do set them up into weight classes too now.
Be more interesting just to have a sumo wrestler knock out like 20 people in a row. I mean, because what are you watching it for? You want the KO, right? It's like people yeah. watch what I call the redneck right turn or redneck left turn. Excuse me. It's racing. They want to see the crashes.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not there. Oh, look at the nuance. Yeah. Oh, he won. It's they want to see people crash and burn.
Have you ever been to one of those professional races like Indianapolis 500?
I've been to the smaller ones. Like my friend's dad was a race car driver, so we got to go for free. And, you know, I watch the race for as long as I can. I'm just like, whatever. I'm just there to socialize with.
Well, you should go to one just to experience it because, you know, the start, when they start, it is, you know, the noise, the vibrations are something to behold. But after that, it's like trying to watch flies chase each other. They're literally going so fast, unless you focus on one particular car and try to follow it with your head, all you're seeing are flashes of color going past you.
Yeah, the bleachers vibrate too. That's it. I know. Like I went to something that I thought was actually cooler in a nerdy way. It was at the Rice Bowl in Japan. Isn't that funny? The Rice Bowl. It's remote control car racing. But these are like high-end remote control cars, not like something from Radio Shack. And a friend of mine was one of the drivers. They have teams. So it's like a bridge in the shape of a donut. And they got the guy with the thing up on there. So they have a bird's eye view of the track. And you have two cars. One is the racer. One's the wrecker. So you want to get one of your cars across the finish line. But your other car is just there to knock off other cars or, you know, ram stuff, whatever. It was pretty interesting. And they have some rules like you can't do this. Da, da. But that's funny because there's wrecks on purpose and there's no person in there. So it's okay. You know, it's just, it is still an expensive machine. So the person's like, oh, you know, it's like they're just going around and they have, you know, ramps and all this because it's a remote control car. It's safe. You know, nothing happens. So
how big are the cars?
Out like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Kind of not as small as what we think, but you know, big enough, and they're fast too. Like they're serious stuff, and they get hit up, boom. And I was like, what am I doing? But like after I got into it, like rooting for one of them. As I kept drinking, it got more interesting. But
yeah,
it's like you can't go to racing or fishing without drinking. It's sacrilegious somewhere.
Yeah, I saw that firsthand at the Indianapolis 500, the one and only time I ever went.
Mm. Yeah, I've seen some horse races too, and it's the same thing. It's like, okay, I guess you have to make this interesting by gambling on it because they're just going in a circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. My cousins do that, used to do that extreme bike stuff where you jump over the cars and you do backflips and stuff, and yeah, both of them stopped finally, but they were good. I think they were on TV. I mean, it's not a real serious sport like football or basketball or anything, but in their genre, it was. It's like the people who do monster trucks and stuff. And they go to the monster truck things, and then there would be like a segment of it of the motorcycles jumping through hoops and shit. I just thought, man, that is crazy and dumb. But when you go, it's so fun. It's so fun. Same with pro wrestling. If you've ever been to a professional wrestling event, it's really fun. Like
I remember these are the kinds of events that it was the only kind of entertainment people had prior to the advent of radio and television.
Mm-hmm.
Much less computers. Now we've got far more choices, but some of the old stuff still survives, like circuses.
That's true. We're watching a circus on CNN.
different
remember time. The time CNN had these two guys from Georgia with a refrigerator. They said they found Bigfoot. That was on TV.
Yeah. Well, you know, Geraldo Rivera was on TV opening up Al Capone's vault.
Oh, yeah. With nothing in it.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing burger.
Jumping the shark. Yeah, they're desperate. I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Cronkite or somebody. He goes, you know, not every day is a news day, but we're going to act as if it was, or something like that.
Well, you know, when you start looking over the internet, and I, you know, I don't know how many viewers you get. You're just on Rumble or BitChute.
I used to be really big on YouTube. I got banned, you know.
Yeah, right. So. Yeah, no, I know that. I'm starting to get banned as well. I had a friend alert me today that he's been linking to my stuff, and they've given him a strike. So I'm controversial, but I try to use Rumble anyway.
Yeah, Rumble and Odyssey are better for that. I mean, my Twitter has 120,000 or something, and I haven't looked at Rumble in a while. I don't even pay attention to the views. I just say what I'm going to say because it's true.
My point with that is there are channels out there. There's a fellow named Stephen Gardner, and he's got like 2.5 million viewers. Well, that's more than CNN and MSNBC get.
True. Yeah, I mean, hey, we got more than CNN Plus.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, think about that. It's just, and you're doing it with, you're not under editorial control. I mean, you do, you know, there's certain things you shouldn't say and try, you know, not just go out for shock value, but it's a way to get information out that is pretty liberating. And even countries that try to shut down certain channels, there you can always get a VPN and circumvent that.
Telegram's been good too for that, and I know countries have banned, like they banned RT in the EU and stuff. But you can get a VPN, you can get around it. People are black pilled, but I'm like, I see it as a white pill. You're black pilled because you're aware of something that always existed anyway. Even when I got kicked off Facebook and YouTube and Patreon and PayPal and Vimeo and all the things I've been thrown off of, okay, because before there was nothing to even get kicked off of. You just couldn't talk, and that was that. Everybody was censored. You could write an op-ed in the paper. That was about it, or print out a pamphlet and hand it around. There was no way to... I remember being so frustrated in 2002, 2003, and they're lying about Iraq, and there was no way for me to tell everybody. I could put it on a website, whatever. How do they know the website exists? There was no social media. I got kicked off MySpace. I got kicked off AOL.
There were some of us back then tried to, you know, get the truth out.
I know. It's even Ritter too. We mentioned him earlier. He did get on TV and say there's no evidence of WMDs. And the fact that they never presented evidence is all you needed to know. You don't have to disprove a negative. Like, okay, if you're saying this, then where are they? Right. And don't show me a cartoon picture of Mobile Weapons Labs, Colin Powell. Or the ice cream truck gas van that I did in the beginning of this show. Look at this. They even had a dinosaur in the basement.
Your kids are going to make, charging you royalties for it.
Yeah. Well, I bought the toys, so.
Well, okay. True.
That is a good toy, though, that ice cream truck. Like, they play with that for a little while, giving you ice cream. And I think those role play activities are great. I try and get them away from the electronic stuff as much as possible. I mean, can play a song or something, but not this, you know.
That's the hunt and peck. That's what chickens do. just the simple act of that, of writing and handwriting. Mm-hmm. This is one of the reasons I think that both Japanese and Chinese and Koreans, the complexity of the characters that are formed wire neural pathways.
Origami and stuff is good for dexterity, and it's fun. It's like, oh, look, a frog. Oh, look, I made this. And you know, those, some of those toys, if you do them right, like from Belgium, I think Legos and stuff,
right?
There's some people build some serious stuff out of Legos.
Yeah Mm-hmm. I mean, that gets the brain energized, things that you're doing with your brain and your hands. You know, mm-hmm. that kind of integrative activity. But sitting there on a, you know, on a smartphone, the ironically called smartphone, with your thumbs pounding away at this, you know, tiny type, you know, keyboard, doesn't exactly build brain power.
Yeah, if it does, it's just the same skill over and over, and you're missing so many other things. And I think if you do that for long enough, it probably mess up your eyesight, because you only got this, not from the screen, just from the distance. You're looking at an object from this far away for too long. You won't be able to see far away later.
Right.
Be able to adjust. Right. Yeah. People are like, it's not the screen. I'm like, I know it's not the screen. I'm talking about sitting in front of anything, even a wall. People who've been in prison a long time have a hard time. If that's, they've always had something in front of them, they can't see distance anymore. So it doesn't have, it's not about the electricity or something. It's just the distance. Too much of it, and too much of it. You think, oh, you have all the news right here. You could use it the right way. Like in theory, you could learn so much. I could learn about any battle in history real fast because it's on my phone if I wanted to. That's not what people do.
it's the kind, frankly, it's the kind of research tool I wish I would have had at my disposal when I worked at the CIA. You know, there's always this belief that you had all these incredible tools available. Nope. It was pretty crude. But now with, and then sort of the other irony is now within these SCIFs, these secure classified information facilities, you can't bring in your iPhones. So you have to rely upon these internal, these intranets.
It's amazing how much stuff is there in written documents that people are like, oh, we need to declassify this and that. I go, well, no, we already know this. You just didn't read it. It's right. It's here. There's plenty of these things in files we already have. I know there's 9/11 victims' families suing for information we already got in the GIS report. They just didn't bother to look at it or don't know it's even there to look at. And it's like you said, the double-edged sword. You get the, yes, you could do it research. You could practice a foreign language. You could do a whole bunch of stuff with a phone or a computer. But at the same time, there's all the gaming and pornography and gossip culture and whatever. People just sitting there with their face with different filters and stuff, delusional, like, oh, this is what I look like. Like, yeah, after tinkering with it, like, that's not you anymore. But the narcissism and stuff, it feeds it. So, yeah, the younger generation has the advantage of information at their fingertips, but they also have more distractions than have ever been around too. And
yeah, the other advantage though is you are able to create communities of common minds, if you will, that are international in scope. I've been, you know, before you were sort of limited to your own local town or your own, you know, community or state, you know, immediate geographic area. And once in a while, people would break out of that and get some, you know, broader recognition. But nowadays, with these kinds of podcasts, you end up reaching people around the world. You know, I've got
Korea, Florida, right?
Yeah, well, I've got a friend, another friend in Japan, who's an expat, retired military, just, you know, one of the smartest guys I've ever run into. And, you know, he follows the blog and monitors. He watches your show, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in Japan for 16 years, so it's like,
yeah,
I know a lot of the expats around there. And yeah, for sure, it's a weird thing because I'll go to the U.S. periodically, see family or whatever, and I meet these strangers who know me because they've watched me for however many years. And so they know all these things about me. And they're all comfortable, like they've known me forever and all. But I'm just meeting someone for the first time, and a little bit weirded out at first. They're like, remember you did this? And I'm like, yeah. They're impressing me what they know. You know, they listen to whatever, they're proving it, and I get it. But like, you got to realize, it's just like you, just that guy over there on the bus, like came up to you, was like, knew your name, and started to, what would you think? Right. So I get that. But it's weird. I'll get it in Japan too when I was just be walking somewhere and Ryan Dawson. Yes. You know, like, what's going on? Because sometimes they hate you too. But all the haters that seem to be online, I've never met one in person get up in my face. It's always positive. They say, well, I've had influencers like come visit Japan when I was there, and nothing but love from people coming up, get a picture, say hi, whatever. No haters, but online they're everywhere. Just seeing
there are a few out there, but that, you know, if they're out there, that means that you're having an effect. Because if you weren't having an effect and you know, rocking the boat a little bit, then they wouldn't care.
You get flack when you're over the target. We say.
Yeah.
So you said this war, you don't think it's going to become a regional war. That's good. But there were the attacks on Syria and Iraqi bases and airstrikes in Syria by the U.S. So is it, could it still bleed into a larger?
Well, yeah. You know, what we're seeing, I'm fascinated by Hezbollah, what they're doing. So Nasrallah is not doing an open call to arms, you know, let's go out there and get them. Let's, you know, go to war. But Hezbollah has been, you know, ratcheting up the attacks and is sort of shut down the northern border of Israel. They've been forced to abandon some military outposts and evacuate at least a couple of the kibbutzim. So, and then, you know, the United States is trying to bomb, you know, let's call it Iranian-backed ammo depots in eastern Syria and western Iraq. But those is jihadist groups, whatever you want to call them, they're striking back, and they are hitting U.S. bases on a daily basis. And it's causing casualties. And the United States is not really paying, reporting those.
Are they covering that up? Because I just found it odd, and I could be totally wrong on this. You'll see an attack, and it'll say 27 injured, no dead. And another 24 injured, no dead.
Yeah,
and I know some of these are probably end up at Walter Reed or somewhere, or Rammstein.
Well, I know they're. I know they've ended up at Walter Reed. I have a friend who's been in there in the wards, and my friend it said that because this person has visited Walter Reed, you know, over the years, trying to deal with and, let's say, minister to the needs of the wounded, And it just told me last week, a little over a week ago, that the wards are filling up with guys from Syria and Iraq that have been wounded. So, you know, injuries are when, you know, you stub your toe in the dark or you trip over a cat or dog and fall down and break your arm. Wounded is when you get hit with somebody firing bullets or explosives at you.
That's what it is. It probably got reported as injuries, and then people re-reported, and suddenly it's wounded. That's what
but these groups that are, you know, linked to Iran, they're having an effect. So, but Iran also appears to be exercising some caution. They're not eager to go to war with the United States, but they're not going to sit back and become a punching bag either. And that's, you know, what I fear is that the United States didn't learn the lesson of 1983 when under Reagan, we put battleships off the coast of Lebanon and decided that we would hurt Iran by firing into Hezbollah positions in the Bekaa Valley. And Hezbollah responded with, or through a fellow named Ibn Mahmoud Nia, who's actually a Palestinian. And he masterminded blowing up the Marine barracks, the French barracks, in one day. And then 4 or 5 months later, blew up the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. And it was after that that the United States sort of withdrew, decided, this is not our fight.
Which was the right thing, what Reagan did, to leave. Yeah.
Well, but the other thing people don't really focus on is up until like 1988, the United States and Israel were collaborating and selling weapons to Iran. Even though we claimed that Iran was, you know, it was carrying out terrorist attacks against U.S. installations, planes, other things. And yet we continue to arm them.
Is that because of the Iran-Iraq war?
Yes. Yep. Yeah. But we were also arming Iraq. So, you know, we were playing both sides of the fence. So that's why I say these other countries, they don't pay attention to our words. They look at what we do. And they see the United States as, you know, plays a very devious double game without any no principle involved at all.
It's kind of like offloading all the yesteryear or obsolete military gear in Ukraine.
Yeah,
let's just get rid of all this stuff first, and then we'll give you some other things. Well, I'm not sure if there are any better weapons really that would make a difference, but they did at first. Okay, get all, rid of all this old stuff. We'll just give them these MK77s or whatever. Like,
but didn't you see the other day? I think it was a Lockheed that rolled out the brand new B2 bomber. It only cost $750 million a piece.
Wow.
I mean, this, it's crazy.
As they have F-35s that crash during peacetime just because, like the one that got ghosted over the Carolinas and they didn't know where it was until it landed somewhere.
Yeah. Thus, the U.S. defense industry has become, I call it it's a Lamborghini factory. And Lamborghinis are fun as long as you have a racetrack to drive them on, but they aren't worth a damn in city traffic, and war is city traffic.
We have a commercial from them, I see.
Where's that?
Green Martin, proud producer and proprietor, patriotic projectile party poppers. Got some up in the brown people making trouble for your empire? Replace them with a charred freighter and a cloud of white smoke. So remember, if your next geostrategic boondoggle's going awry, don't call us. We'll call you.
Yep.
I know it's a sick thing, but I think humor is effective. And the right doesn't do it enough.
Yeah. No, they
is. Lockheed Martin. It should just be their new name.
Yep. That's where I try to have fun with that on my blog.
Noticed. Sonar 21, everybody, get in there. I'll put the link. The link is in the description if you're watching on Rumble to Larry's blog. Renegades Beat NWO sends in some money and says, two dead Lincolns, because F him twice. Haha. Shears of death. Even people in my family who were pro-Israel are disgusted and asking questions. Things are changing, my friends. Cheers to you, legends. Is it Thanksgiving yet? What is that, next Thursday?
Next Thursday.
Yeah. That's going to be some interesting discussions, I think.
Yeah. There's the Israelis are not getting as much of the benefit of the doubt as they have in previous conflicts. There are larger marches against Israel now in the United States than ever before. There are attempts to quash and penalize anybody promoting or speaking in favor of the Palestinians. But a lot of the pro-Palestinian folks are pushing back, saying, no, we're not going to take it. I watch with interest that the Congress is so oriented towards the Israeli money through AIPAC that it's skewed in terms of how it presents the issue. But again, you've got this disconnect. And this is where Israel really miscalculated, because I think in the aftermath of that October 7th attack, if Israel would have played the victim card and said, look, we have been unfairly, unjustly attacked here, and they have captured, taken our women and children, and they had gone to Egypt, interceded with Egypt and with Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Turkey behind the scenes, and instead of launching these military attacks, and then it had opened up negotiations for the release of the hostages, Israel standing in the world, I think, would be a lot better. They'd be in a much stronger position. But what they've done is, you've seen countries that in the past, particularly Jordan, Egypt, Turkey, that would sort of stand with Israel, they've backed away. The anger, the coming out of Turkey by Erdogan, for example, is just unprecedented. And then you've got countries in Latin America that in the past were seen as sort of pro-Israel, Colombia, Chile, Honduras, Brazil, Argentina. I mean, they're all, they're all punching back at Israel. So Israel's really ended up isolating itself.
Yeah.
Those images of babies, those are not AI generated. They're killing basically 100 children a day, and that is resonating around the world. It's making people sick.
6,000 kids. You're just assuming half the population is a child or children. I mean, even the incubator, like the babies on incubators lie about the Iraq Kuwait, the Tom Lantos lie from
right
Naira. coached by Hill and Knowlton. That's become true.
Yeah.
But no, it's for fast. Palestinians. And it's 39 babies, so almost 40 babies. The Israelis did that. And yeah. they just, you can talk to these people on Omegle and stuff, this random Israelis, and they all have the same story. But we got attacked for no reason. Oh, the babies. And they don't care that apartments get bombed or whatever. Like, okay, you don't like Hamas. Well, why don't you send in special forces and take them out? You can't. Well, why didn't you negotiate? Why don't you, here's how you get the hostages. Do a prisoner swap. You took them. So, you know, that's how you can get everybody back. Not interested.
Yeah, and Saudi Arabia and Egypt were in a position they could have helped. Because if nothing else, put pressure on Qatar. The United States could have put enormous pressure on Qatar. And with these other Arab Muslim nations lined up with the United States going after Qatar to say, okay, you tell Hamas, they give these people up, or Hamas is getting kicked out of Qatar. You guys don't get to stay here anymore. And your money's drying up. So because at that point, there weren't, dead Palestinians and dead children. You know, Israel really missed an incredible opportunity where they might have actually been able to effectively gut Hamas by cutting out its financial source.
Assuming that's what they wanted. I don't think so. I think they do what Moshe Dayan said right here. Israel must invent dangers, and to do this, it must adapt a strategy of provocation and revenge. They got so embarrassed by IDF soldiers being stepped on and their tanks being blown up and stuff that it was like the mystique was gone and they have to go hit the punching bag, right? But you take it out on civilians.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I know. Because they felt like totally humiliated.
Yeah, the other wild card, though, in this whole thing is Bibi's, tenuous political position. He is only enjoying sort of the attack support, but as people start thinking about it and reflecting more on what happened and how it happened, the anger against him is growing. The relatives of the hostages are putting more pressure on him, and I don't think he'll be prime minister by the end of the year. I think he's likely to go as well. It'll be a race to see who sticks around, him or Zelensky.
I've got anything else. I was going to say thing. Ukraine wrapped up by New Year's. Not well. I mean, at least Zelensky. Because once Avdiivka falls, it just seems like they could push him to the Dnieper River. It seems that's what a lot of analysts are looking at and saying. At least
they indicate that it is a critical juncture. And it will unhinge the defense. So it'll be sort of like the Union troops breaking through after the siege at Richmond. The army's it's retreating. I don't know if there anybody on the Ukrainian side will have the guts and courage that Lee did to say, look, we're not going to continue this. I'm going to save my men.
It was done with Vicksburg, really, but even Lee could win in the battlefield, but it didn't matter. Like if you could kill three times as many Union soldiers and still lose the war because they started with five times as many, and the Navy and everything else. So, Lee did the right thing, but afterward, I think he regretted it, and so did Forrest. He's like, if we'd known Reconstruction was going to be the way it was, we'd kept on fighting. Because they killed them anyway. So many people died as sharecroppers and poverty after the war.
Yeah.
Not talked about it. Well, one last question. I'm going to shift over to Ukraine, too. Say Zelensky gets sent to Miami or whatever. What happens to Ukraine after this war is over? What leverage do they have to negotiate what remains of Ukraine?
They have zero leverage to negotiate. So I think Russia, Putin really was in a way a lousy negotiator. When you go back and look at the peace agreement that was worked out in Turkey in March 29th of 2022.
Boris Johnson destroyed.
Well, it wasn't just Boris. It was actually Boris was the messenger. Mm-hmm. It was the United States that destroyed it.
Well,
I don't know if you had a chance to read my article 2 days ago. That was I laid out the timeline. It was done by these two German authors. One's a retired German general who handed the Bundeswehr, and they go through in detail the timeline. And so I broke it out in a quick summary. You could look at it. And early on, Zelensky actually agreed. And so Russia was willing to settle. You know, they were going to, you know, stopped in place. And then Putin, as a gesture of goodwill, started on April 1st to withdraw the tanks and forces that were positioned north of Kiev and around Kharkiv, started pulling them back. Now, at the time, I thought maybe they were just doing a feint and that they were, you know, repositioning for an offense elsewhere. But they really were pulling back as a sign of good faith that they wanted to get this negotiation underway. They wanted to stop NATO coming east. Mm-hmm. The United States met with the NATO countries and said, no, we're not going to back this. And so they set about sabotaging the agreement. And then they sent Johnson and Lloyd Austin to Zelensky, said, no, you sign on to this, you're dead to us. And so Zelensky did a complete reversal. And it's about the third week in April, it was when Russia then, their artillery shells, prior to that, they'd been firing like 2,000, 2,500 a week. It then went up to 7,000. They you know, almost tripled it. And because they recognized, okay, we're going to be in a fight. And then it wasn't until, I guess, July or August, they recognized we're going to have to call up more men. And the war changed completely. So where the negotiations will go this time, Russia's going to demand Odessa. They'll demand Kharkiv. They'll basically, I think, take everything up to the Dnieper River. And then, you know, after that, hey, if Poland wants the rest of Western Ukraine, go have at it. I think Russia would be quite happy to see Poland saddled with that, you know, bag of trash.
I mean, it's different languages.
That part, yeah. But that part of you know, Ukraine has lost the essential industrial areas of its country, and a significant part of its farmland. So, I don't see the Russians in any kind of mood to be conciliatory at all. They're gonna insist that they get what they've demanded because of all the different outrages that they've endured. In terms of attacks on the Kerch Bridge and the assassinations that have taken place in Moscow and other places.
How is that not an act of terrorism just to attack Moscow?
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was an act of terror. But, you know, when you do it in war, all things are possible. That's why we could justify killing, you know, we killed about 900,000 German civilians with the bombing. And those civilian deaths didn't make a damn bit of difference in how the war was going to turn out. Russia beat the Nazis without that bombing. You know, those bombings didn't affect at all the German operations on the Eastern Front.
Well, you got America give loans to other Europeans to contract themselves to rebuild the stuff they destroyed.
Yeah.
Borg Khan sends in 25. Larry B is open as you like. You're on Rumble. Start turning up the temperature, gentlemen. Keep it up, guys. We have one from XD Wiz. Says, nice to see Larry on again. I think Dr. Shiva was intelligent, but I think he's wrong on Tucker Carlson. P.S. F. Lincoln. We get F. Lincoln on everything. I'm proud of that. Penfold says, get out of Syria. You're there illegally anyway. We pay Israel to tell us what to do. We pay Israel to tell us what to do. There you go. Marvin John Haymeyer, that's the killdozer dude, says, just saw a satellite imagery of Bet Hanun and Atatra. I fuck up that. Atatra. And can say, holy bleep, if genocide was not apparent, it now is. And then in all caps, fuck Lincoln, fuck the Union, and fuck McCain. What real punishment will Israel face? Yeah, McCain still lives in the soul of Nikki Haley, John Bolton, and Lindsey Graham. But
yeah, Nikki is, boy, she's toxic.
Dude, she is. I've always said we have this thing called Gaffey, Grabs Ankles for Israel. And on the Gaffey meter, we the way we reference that is, on a scale of one to Nikki Haley, how Gaffey are they?
Well, you saw, you know, the Nikki clearly has no sense of irony because she called for the social media ban on people who won't use her real name. Yeah. Which I said, I guess that means she can't post because she doesn't use her real name.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like we had a joke because her name sounds like ramrodding. So we're like, yeah, Ramrod Knesset. What's your name? Something like that. She's just just unapologetic. Wasn't she the one that had an Israeli flag lapel at a U.S. presidential debate?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so she's her ambitions know no limit, and there are a lot of people that'll back her, but I don't think she'll overcome Trump.
But. No, that guy's got stadiums full of people. Just they love him. Like the Trump supporters are like, it's almost like he's Michael Jackson rock star level or something. He can do no wrong.
Yeah,
and the more he says, the more blunt he is, the better.
Yeah, sometimes he's his own worst enemy in that regard. But you know, it hasn't. He's developed a solid base. The problem with the Republicans right now is they are so divided between those that hate Trump and those that love Trump, and the Trump haters are going to do everything they can in their power to try to sabotage him. And so I think it's likely that, you know, the Democrats will prevail again and the country will continue to slide into the toilet bowl.
If Biden went, I don't even know if he can make it another 4 years.
No, I don't think physically. He's already roasted. You know, he just.
One of his staff fell down the stairs in Poland. It's not just Biden tripping up the stairs. I mean, rolled down the stairs.
Yeah, I saw that video.
Yeah. I thought, at first, it was labeled, oh, Biden fell. I'm like, that's not Biden, but somebody did. I mean, they had to catch him at the end. Getting dangerous. And that's why they should need those bridges and then take an escalator or something. I don't know. If you get too old to go up and down the stairs, maybe you shouldn't be the one sent to negotiate with anybody.
Yeah, true. Very true.
They're so entrenched and ensconced in these positions. There's no, you look at the dinner and he's got Yellen on one side and Blinken on the other. And it's just, you have these trolls surrounding you.
You saw the faces, the expressions on Blinken's face. Have you seen all
he
those?
Looks like he's on drugs or.
Oh man.
What was that?
You know, I think he was waiting for Biden to fall over dead or something. I mean, he was just, had this look of terror in his face.
It seemed like he was about to puke or something. Like,
yeah, he was not having a good day.
But you know who had a good day? San Francisco. It was clean for the first time ever because Xi Jinping came to visit. People are begging him, Xi, can you do a world tour or a tour of the United States city to city so we can have like a day without crime? And they could have done it the whole time.
It didn't get a day without crime. Remember that Czech television crew got robbed.
Well,
but at least they weren't having to
normal. Yeah,
they weren't having to step over piles of feces, human feces, in the streets.
Yeah, the tent cities got removed and put somewhere temporarily. Just
right.
It's like a kid, like the family. It's like clean the house. Someone's coming over, and then but they don't maintain that. They just run around and act like, oh yeah, we're always clean. Yeah, so.
Right.
God, it's bad, man. It's bad. We have the civil war in Sudan. We've got the genocide in Gaza, still ongoing conflict in Ukraine, which numbers wise is still the worst, like 500,000 dead probably.
Yeah, more than that. So not good.
Well, I was going to ask you, if you're good on time, what would your dream cabinet be? Like if you could get rid of Biden and like just put people in positions, who would be the president, vice president, secretary of state, if we could like just pick intelligent people who ought to be there, what would be a better lineup? Fun question.
I would like to. I'd like to see Doug McGregor as Secretary of Defense.
That would be nice, really nice.
You know, he'd do a good job. There's a retired former Delta Force commander by the name of Pete Blaber. He's really exceptional in terms of his both concepts of leadership and how he conducted himself as a leader. I'd just give him any job. I think, frankly, someone like that, if he was put in as president, would be a lot better off, because he there's some people that talk it, but don't live it. And he espoused certain principles, and he lived by those principles and treated people accordingly. And, you know, he was very, it's probably one of the reasons he didn't go too far in the military hierarchy, because he was, you know, honest to a fault. Our entire political system right now, it produces incentives to attract the wrong kind of people. Trying to find a way to get the right people. I have to think some more about it. I haven't
put it together. It's a hard question to do off the top of your head, but the chat said the correct answer is Ron Paul at all positions. if that's possible.
Ron's too old, but we could put Rand in. You know, Rand has got some of the, he's got some good instincts as well.
Well, you just put someone who's too old in all the departments we shouldn't have. P1 Dizzy just sent in 109, so I can't let you go before this. Says, Larry, thank you for your truth. Question, what do you tell your grandchildren about our world as it exists today? Where can we make a difference while we still can?
In your local communities. We got to stop worrying about national level, trying to influence what's taking place on the national stage. We can have a lot more impact in local communities, making sure school boards are not filled with these crazies pushing the diversity, equity, inequality nonsense, and all the sexual deviancy that's been promoted. That's where you start, because then you ensure that the kids are getting a proper education. We're really undergoing sort of an interesting revolution here in Manatee County, where I live in Florida. 4 years ago, this is largely, a bunch of old people, God's waiting room. But now the number of families that have moved in, I mean, kids, parents with 2, 3, 4 kids running around, it's really increased dramatically. And so they're having to build new schools. And so you hope that within that, they get the kind of education they need. And we're fortunate that we live in a county that is not beholden to all of this woke nonsense, which has been really destroying America.
I think grandparents should get involved in PTA, think local, act local, agree with everything Larry just said. Or you get your online stuff, your Courses Plus or Dawson University or Tom Woods or whomever, if they have a sort of online courses, you can at least supplement your education. I'm not saying stop going to public school, but you can supplement your education by getting some of the online schools. There's a lot of good information there, and or even just one subject, just math or just history, just something. There's a lot of great stuff lots of people have done some very good things, and there's a lot of free stuff. I really enjoy Space Time PBS. Like, I learn all kinds of things that I would have to pay a lot of money to learn from. Otherwise, I don't want to go back to university, but there's always updates in science. There's always updates. And Sabina Hosenfelter is another great person to follow. So you can find influencers, online classes, get involved in your local school, your PTA, and education is where it's at. Like, more than any other field, that's the one that's the most screwed up and the most important. So think local, act local.
Yeah, and always be learning.
You're always a student, forever students.
Yeah.
Again, you're never going to know it all. We can never all become Lindsey Graham. So it's the Dunning-Kruger in full swing. Thank you so much. We'll have you again. Peace in Gaza. I wish there was more we could do, but let's all try and clean up our own yard. Everybody have a great night, and we'll be back with Daniel McAdams and maybe E. Michael Jones and some other guests lined up. So we'll see you then. Peace.